Good afternoon, everyone. It is May 23rd, 2017, and we have 1:05 p.m. to House Judiciary Committee. And I want to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 682. So, Senator Denbrough.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 682A establishes that an obligor of child support who is incarcerated for at least 180 days is presumed unable to pay child support during that incarceration, and also establishes procedures to rebut this presumption and for reinstatement of the obligation. There are no amendments, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
Thank you, Chair Olson. And members of the committee, Michael Denbrough, Senate District 23, Northeast, Southeast Portland. And I'm here substituting for my good colleague, Senator Winters, who was supposed to be here, but something came up, so I took her place. I have to go run back to where I was. But I did want to introduce this bill, which came out of another bill that came out of the Reentry Task Force. This one was the particular brainchild of one of our task force members, Commissioner Janet Carlson from here in Marion County, former legislator, and a real passionate advocate for reentry, as is her fellow Commissioner Kevin Cameron, who also used to be one of us. And this is a bill that, as Ms. Perez mentioned, focuses on the issue of people who are incarcerated who have not had the opportunity or just for whatever reason have not gotten their affairs in order before they've gone in. Now, another bill that came out of the task force is working more comprehensively to deal with pre-entry issues like that, you know, just the need to make sure that when people enter the system, they've got their affairs in order, because otherwise, if they have outstanding obligations while they're inside, those just keep growing and growing and growing in terms of interest accrued and penalties, et cetera. And child support is one of them. This bill will make it automatic that if someone is in that situation, there's a presumption that the child support, their child support obligations need to be suspended, and that they won't be in a position to repay for, and I forget the exact number of days, but X number of days after they come out, unless they are. And, you know, in some cases, they are able to make payments, and they want to make payments, and of course, they then can make payments. So that's a background to it. It's you know, one of those areas that we identified as creating really serious barriers to reentry when people come out having just huge amounts of fines and fees and obligations that they can just never catch up on. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but probably it would be better for you to ask the experts in this area.
Any questions, members? Okay.
I have one.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought I cued you, Representative Springer.
So I was having computer issues. So you may or may not be able to answer this. Yeah. I'm not sure. Does the state suspend its obligations and fees when somebody is incarcerated using the same logic that we're contemplating suspending child support?
I actually don't know that, and I would suggest that you ask that.
Fair enough.
Anyone else? I think we'll have the next panel that comes up.
Sure, Vice Chair.
Staff has an answer.
Members of the committee.
Right. Yeah, Whitney knows.
As far as criminal fines and fees, they would not be suspended while someone is incarcerated. However, there are statutes that direct courts or judges to take into consideration ability to pay when imposing attorney's fees and fines and fees. They can't or don't consider that when imposing restitution, obviously, but for the other court costs in a criminal case, judges are supposed to look at you know, incarceration as far as that ability to repay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Springer.
If I may. So this is an issue that bugs me a lot. So the state will not, I mean, there can be some mitigating circumstances in sentencing, but the state is not willing to waive. But yet we're asking, and child support is supporting a child. But yet we are looking at unilaterally saying, we can waive that for the child. That doesn't make sense. Fees, penalties, interest, that kind of thing, I can see some room there for negotiation, but to simply say that child, basically the statement is that child doesn't need to be supported by that time or there needs to be some alternative, that doesn't set well with me. I understand barriers to reentry. Are we creating any barriers for a child that's not receiving the child support?
And if I could just say that I think, you know, the impulse behind this bill was some very real experience that they're having in Marion County. And, you know, the proverbial, you can't get blood out of a turnip, I think, is what really is at play here. The person just does not have the income to be paying the support. So the child's not going to get support one way or the other. But the hope is that when they come out, they'll be able to get their affairs in order, not be so hopelessly behind that they just, you know, give up. And then they'll be able to get on to a regular payment plan to support the child.
Representative Sanchez.
So this is, interestingly enough, an issue that is actually, in my opinion, very, very important, despite the fact that it can be perceived as not supporting a child. What's also very important is that when someone is in prison, I think the most money they can make is like $170 a month. And that's if you get a good job in prison. The average person makes about $50 a month in prison, maybe less. I think the low end is 30, somewhere around there. And the problem is that when, you know, we've talked about this many times, when people come out of prison, and I've seen it, literally seen it that, you know, there was the person who knew and understood there's paperwork to get that deferment, and the person who didn't and came out with a $30,000 and $40,000 child support bill that they can't do, that then, unfortunately, once they get a job, then, you know, a good half or third, two-thirds of their income is then gone towards child support because the bill is so big. They then decide, well, it's not worth it to work. I might as well just get an under-the-table job and live as best I can, because they can't live off the job they have because all of the money goes towards child support. I think deferring it is not the worst thing in the world. If we expect people to step back up and be good law-abiding citizens, then we need to figure out how to help support them to be able to do that without having to not be able to live on the job that they have. And because we, you know, I mean, not that I'm saying we should pay people anymore in the prison system. I don't think we're going to get to that. But the reality of it is there is no money. There's no money for them to pay child support. There's no money to make that happen when somebody's in prison. It's just not possible. And it really doesn't do us any good as a state. I think somebody just was talking about a report in the Oregonian about all of this debt. Representative Parrish was speaking about all of this debt owed to the state of Oregon, upwards of $3 billion that I'm assuring you we will never see most of that, because it's just not possible to collect it. And we certainly can't collect it from somebody who can't get a job because they got a felony and can't get a place to live because they got a felony and are just doing the very best they can.
It would be interesting to see what the next panel says in response to what you just said.
Okay.
Representative Vile.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson. I had a question of counsel. Do you know if, and this may be a very naive question, I apologize if it is, do you know if child support is something that can be subjected to bankruptcy?
I'm going to have a feeling that our next witness will be able to answer definitively, but I have a feeling the answer is no.
Okay.
That it can't
be. That's kind of what I thought. I just wanted to confirm.
Okay, and Representative Weininger.
Thank you. I want to note that I think that this is a really important bill, in part because I think by helping people put their affairs in order before they go into an incarceration setting, we can set them up for having the ability to have a decent credit rating, credit score, and also decent landlord references when they are have completed serving their penalties. And I think, you know, we know that people have trouble getting jobs and they have trouble getting an apartment. And if there is some coaching that helps people understand they need to, you know, shut down their phone bill and their utilities and notify their landlord that they're leaving occupancy, I think those are some prudent steps that we can help individuals in this situation take that put them in a better position to be financially self-sufficient at the other end of a penalty. And we all, as I think Representative Sanchez said, we all benefit if people are able to be self-supporting at the completion of a penalty. So if there's any testimony on that kind of theme that we could hear by from subsequent witnesses, I'd love to hear it. Thanks.
Yeah, let me just say in response, and then I get to escape. So what you're talking about is something that we did address in the pre-entry bill, and that's one that creates a pilot project to do exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about. That's in Ways and Means. It came out of the Senate. I don't remember the number, but it's in Ways and Means, awaiting, you know, I hope, the able hand of this woman who's sitting next to me here.
I don't know her name.
No, it's okay. I can. Yeah.
No, you have. Did you finish?
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. I don't have need to add anything, unless they have a question.
Sorry, wonders you don't want to share.
Yeah, go on the record.
Well, for the record, Jackie Winter, State Senator, District 10, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 682 as amended, and I'm sure that my able Senator Gimbrough has shared with you the reason why, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. We worked together for several months, actually, on the issue of reentry and looking at those barriers that individuals have in returning back to the community. Senate Bill 682 is one of those initiatives that was brought to us by Commissioner Janet Carlson here in Marion County. I don't need to tell those of you who have been involved with reentry how difficult it is when individuals are returning to the community and have an enormous amount of debt that they may or may not be able to pay. And this helps on just the one instance that has to do with child support. I'm very pleased to note that both the Department of Revenue as well as the Child Support Agency agreed with this particular piece of legislation.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Okay, and then I'd like to have Kate, if you'd come up, Janet Carlson, Commissioner Carlson, and is it Conceda?
Conceda.
Okay, thank you. If you'd come up. Kate, you're probably going to start.
I'm going to what?
Are you going to start?
No, I'm going to defer to Commissioner Carlson, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Vice Chair Olson. I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. I did serve on the Joint Interim Task Force on Reentry, Employment, and Housing, along with Senators Gimbrough and Winters, and also Lou Frederick, who was representative and senator, and Julie Parrish. So Senate Bill 682 really came out of our discussions in that task force. It's been endorsed by the Association of Oregon Counties. We work closely with the Department of Justice, also our district attorney's staff, and the Oregon Department of Corrections. We had a little work group that we put together to pull that off. We have a very robust reentry program in Marion County, as you heard Senator Winters talk about, and also with Justice Reinvestment. But we're always looking for ways to improve that program and to reduce barriers for people who are coming out of prison and want to be successful in the community. We know that when someone can be a productive member of society, it increases public safety because there are fewer victims. It helps the taxpayer because there are fewer stays in prison and jail. And it helps everyone in the community when that person becomes a good parent, spouse, tenant, employee. So that's our goals that we have with our reentry initiative. We also know, and Representative Sanchez actually stole most of my talking points. I don't know how you could see them from all the way up here, but people coming out of prison come out with significant debt. We do a breakfast each year. We've just completed our eighth annual Giving People a Second Chance breakfast, and we raise about $20,000 in an hour for people to help them with client needs. And I'm involved in doing the video programming for those each year, and so I've interviewed a lot of people who have been featured on those videos. And it's interesting to me to see people coming out with $10,000 in debt, $20,000 in debt, and oftentimes they have a Department of Revenue requires them to make payments, and they'll pay $20 a month or $25 or what they can afford, and you just know they will never be able to pay that significant amount of debt. This doesn't resolve that whole problem of debt. This just kind of writes or aligns a piece that really is kind of off kilter, I think, in our current system. Child support is oftentimes a part of that debt, and I do want to say parenthetically that we're not talking about accrued child support that happens before someone goes into prison, because that's still going to be out there, and they're still going to be responsible for that. We're really just talking about when someone becomes incarcerated, and we know that they have the inability to pay, and Kate will talk about the exceptions to that. They might have a trust fund in very limited cases. Most of the time people have no income and are unable to pay child support. And yet for whatever reason, they don't get the memo, they don't read the paper correctly, they send an email to our district attorney's office and say, hey, I'm in prison. That doesn't suffice in our legal system. You actually have to fill out forms, you have to fill them out correctly. A court has to modify a child support order. And when that doesn't happen, until they do the right thing, those dollars accrue no matter what. And so then it just adds to that already large amount of debt that people have. And so as we have talked about earlier, people oftentimes then start taking cash jobs, start working under the table. They run from that child support obligation. And I think our goal, and Department of Justice talks about this a lot too, is that we want people to step up and be accountable and be good parents and provide for their child support. And so anything that we can do to encourage legitimate employment and a child support payment that is realistic for the person, the more likely we're going to have families be connected together, and it's good for the child, good for the custodial parent, and also good for the person that needs to take responsibility in that child support arrangement. So I think that's really the overarching rationale behind the bill. I think I'll turn it, well, actually, if I could have Conchetta actually tell her story. I told it last time because she couldn't come, but she's here in person, and Conchetta works for our district attorney's office and actually ran this by a number of other people around the state who work with child support in district attorney's offices and can give you kind of a real life example of how this plays out.
Thank you, Commissioner. Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Conchetta Schlesinger. I am the trial team leader for the Marion County District Attorney's Family Support Division. So we work very closely with Commissioner Carlson in regards to this bill. And anecdotally, I mean, the story that I tell from having worked with people for obligors and obligees for quite a while is that you'll have someone, for instance, that's a professional, like an accountant, in real life, and something happens. They get convicted of a felony. They get sentenced to prison. And while they may have had a good job in the past and paid well, and so, for instance, in my testimony, they may have been able, because of the way we calculate child support, it's based on incomes, they may have been able to make a significant payment based on their income in the past. They go to prison, they come out, and they may have lost the licensure that was required for them to have their good-paying job. There may be other barriers to them receiving employment, because obviously when someone is convicted of a felony and they have a record, it's far more difficult probably to get a job than if you don't. So they may have a desire to be with their family, they may have a desire to support their family, but they simply don't have that ability that they had in the past. And if we continue them based on their prior ability to pay, they've got a much higher debt load that accrues every month that they may, for instance, even if they go get a job working somewhere at a lower level job, and I think in my testimony I referenced, for instance, they go work at a gas station,
they're earning, but they are never going to earn what they earned before. And so even though they're paying, they're accruing a debt every month because they aren't able to pay what they were able to pay in the past. And so even though they're a good person, they're paying, they've got a job, debt is accruing that in all likelihood they're never going to be able to pay back. And so because of that, we it provides a significant barrier to that person in their life. Anecdotally, we see that it very significantly impacts their ability to relate with the family, including having time with their child. I mean, oftentimes people feel shame or they feel reticent to contact the family if there's a debt accruing. So even in situations where there's a close family bond, there can be some issues and some difficulty with that. So for those reasons, our office very much supports this bill and has been grateful to work with Commissioner Carlson on the bill.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Kate Cooper Richardson. I'm the Division Administrator for the Division of Child Support at the Department of Justice and the Director of the Oregon Child Support Program. What I want to put out there first is just tell you where the current state of the law is. We've been doing this a long time, the Child Support Program. The current law allows for a modification of a child support order when someone's incarcerated, and then it, by operation of law, when that person is released, it returns to the previously court-ordered amount 61 days after release. The barrier that has been is that it actually requires a full modification, and that is upon request or upon learning of that someone is in has been incarcerated. That doesn't always happen right away, and sometimes that doesn't happen at all. We do have a number of requests that come in from the person receiving support. So perhaps the mother of the children, they don't want that child support amount to be accruing because it's just debt to them that they will never see, amounts that they will never see. And it creates, in some situations, a false expectation that they may get that amount of money. So that's the current state of the law. But there has also been, this is a very timely bill because there was a change in federal regulation that was effective January 19th of this year. This is a federal program, child support is a federal program that requires either a notice right away to some within 15 days of incarceration, not very practical in some ways, or a way to modify or adjust the child support so it does not accrue while someone is incarcerated. And then it also has to be based on ability to pay after that person is released from prison. The problem with our current law in Oregon is that it bumps right back up to the original amount, as in Conchetta's example. That's not based on ability to pay. That's based on a prior ability to pay. And there's plenty of research that supports that on average, 50%, their earning power usually adjusts about 40 or 50% of what it was before. What this bill does that we think is works very well is that instead of actually doing a modification, it allows a suspension of the child support, of the accrual of the child support. We have a parallel process already in Oregon, in our Oregon Child Support Program with people who are in public assistance, and it prevents the accrual even if we don't find out about that person being incarcerated. We can't do retroactive modifications. We can suspend, though, and have it go back to that point of incarceration. The other great thing that this bill does is that it provides for a match with the Department of Corrections so that we can have a match process with them. Right now it's a pretty manual process, but it really does work. And I will tell you that in our initial match that we've been doing, 9 out of 10 cases are cases where a party's been on public assistance before. So chances are that they're going to have an ability to pay while they're in prison is very small. This is just a rebuttable presumption, though. It doesn't happen automatically. So there's a presumption when you're incarcerated that you don't have that ability to pay because you're not earning money. But there are examples of situations where they have some outside income and debt. And in that case, it is not
suspended or the amount is not goes down to zero. The other thing I want to point out about this and is that we don't require that this situation with intact families. If you have a parent who goes into jail and that family's been relying on that income, we don't assign child support debt to that person. So there is a distinct disadvantage for those who don't for a non-intact family. There's a distinct disadvantage because their family may be coming out of prison with more debt than they could even adjust for. So that's something we like to point out because it does sort of sometimes it provides an aha moment. So this bill allows the Oregon Child Support Program to comply with the new federal regulations. It provides a more realistic time frame. That suspension it goes through until 121st day, and then the child support amount is restated at 50%, but it also triggers a modification, and that modification would be on ability to pay. Do you have any questions for me about what we're currently doing or what this bill would do?
Any questions?
Did I address all the questions that were raised previously?
Representative Vile?
Tell me what the bankruptcy situation is precisely.
Vice Chair Olson, Chair Barker, and Representative Vile. Child support obligations are not subject to dischargement in bankruptcy.
Under any circumstances?
I don't believe so. That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? So, Concetta, I just want to say I appreciated your letter that you sent
to us.
That's good. I think it's really clear
on
what this bill does, so appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 682A and open a work session on Senate Bill 682A.
All right. Mr. Vice Chair, I move Senate Bill 682A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 682A to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Pass. Who would like to carry it? Okay, thank you. Representative Sanchez.
Who needs a chair? We can do this.
Okay, so let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 509A. Whitney?
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 509A allows the Child Support Division to determine distribution sequence of payments within a child support case. There are no amendments, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay, so we have Kate, you get to come back up again, and Vera, if you'd come up.
I'm going to be here the whole time.
Yeah, you should just sit there, Kate.
Do you just want to park there?
Maybe. No.
I think I did that last time. Don't laugh if I do it every single time, please. Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Cooper Richardson. I'm the director of the Oregon Child Support Program at the Department of Justice. Senate Bill 509A is a bill that the department is bringing forward. It's a pretty technical bill, but it really is helping us to determine the sequence that the program applies payments to child support obligations, which include child support, medical support, and in some cases, spousal support obligations. The bill provides us rulemaking authority to get down and dirty with the details of exactly how to do that. But there are certain circumstances that we may need to override a debtor's designation. We have very many buckets of where, especially if someone has a multiple child support cases, of where money can apply. And in our automated system that is being built at this point in time, it's a very rare circumstance. I think we've only had a couple over the last few years where a debtor and someone obligated to pay child support tries to designate to a different bucket than really would be consistent with our regulations and our application of the accruals and the resolution of their debt. It also allows us to prioritize payments to principal over interest, and we're not consumer debt. Child support is not consumer debt, where usually that's applied interest before principal. But while we don't, the program itself doesn't assign interest, there are many states that actually apply interest to child support payments, or in Oregon, a person receiving support can request, and if they bring forward the calculations, interest to be applied. But it's for child support obligations, it's important to be able to override, if you will, the accounting manuals that contemplate regular consumer debt. You have my written testimony that explains why we're looking to make this change, and it would be, of course, under rule, and I want to also emphasize that it would only be it preserves the right of debtors to designate a special payment to one case over another case. It's only the buckets within that particular case: child support, medical support, spousal support. And I have my policy development director here too, who can answer the super technical questions if you have any.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you.
So we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 509A and open a work session on Senate Bill 509A.
Mr. Vice Chair, I move Senate Bill 509A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 509A to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 509A. We need a carrier. Your carrier?
Yeah.
All right. We step up. Open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 510A.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 510A addresses the Department of Justice's access to insurance company data for delinquent debtors who are receiving payments for injury or loss. Senate Bill 510A expands the definition of account to include pending claims of at least $500 under an insurance policy, not including property damage claims. It also requires 10 days notice to the Department of Justice before a financial institution disperses these funds to a debtor. There is a -A4 amendment which requires this notice to be made in 3 days. The A4 amendment has a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Okay, Kate, you're back on, and Mike Ritchie.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, sorry to have forgotten you before, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Cooper Richardson. I'm Director of the Oregon Child Support Program at the Department of Justice. Senate Bill 510A, as was just described by counsel, would identify delinquent obligors, so that is persons who are paying support, who have pending claims for injury or loss for which an insurance payment would be made. We already do receive many matches with many insurance companies already. There's a federal insurance match system, and we do receive those matches and have received child support from claims in the past. However, not all insurance companies voluntarily match through the federal process, and some of the biggies out there really don't, unless the state has a state mandate. There are a number of other states that have a state mandate for a match, either through an agreement with that particular company and the child support program, or through the federal match. We've sat down and worked with a big table of industry, insurance industry representatives, to work out the details of this particular
this particular legislation, but I will tell you that we came to a very good agreement, and I will tell you that this will make a big difference in many children's lives, even in the short amount of time that we were matching with one of the larger insurance companies. We saw a very big increase in a short amount of time in claims, and therefore child support that we were able to attach to those claims.
Kate, I take it then that you've sat down and had the discussion, and that's what the Dash 4s reflect, is the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies discussion that you had?
Yes, they do.
Thank you.
And if you have any questions, I have Mike Ritchie here, who serves as counsel to the program and was the mastermind behind all the agreeable amendments.
Chair Barker, excuse me. For the record, I'm Mike Ritchie with General Counsel. There is one thing I would like to emphasize just for the legislative record, and it's something that we've worked extensively, and members of the committee, we've worked extensively with the insurance lobby on this bill. And as currently written, the bill would permit the insurance companies to match one of two ways. They can enter into individual agreements with the Department of Justice about how those matches take place, or they can match in accordance with rules to be adopted, and those rules will be adopted in collaboration with the insurance lobby, and it's contemplated that the rules will permit matching through the use of the Insurance Services Office and the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement. That's the way 99% of the matches already currently take place. It's the way the insurance companies that are not now matching in Oregon match in the states where the matches are mandated. It's the way they'd prefer to match in Oregon. It's the way we'd prefer for them to match in Oregon. And I, just as reassurance to that industry group, I wanted to make that very clear that is our express intent.
Any questions? Representative Greenlight.
Thank you. Why are property claims excluded?
Property claims were excluded deliberately, and it's an interesting question, Representative Greenlight. Of the six states that match across the country, some include property claims, some do not. I think the theory behind not including them is very often the payouts are not to the actual owner of the property. They go to the people that repair the property. So if we take the money, the people who repair the property don't get paid for repairing the property.
Any other questions? So, John, are you interested in saying anything? Okay, we'll disregard that. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So we're going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 510A and open up a work session on Senate Bill 510A.
Mr. Vice Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 510A.
So, Vice Chair Williamson moves the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 510A. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 510A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 510A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition? How's that?
Good.
All right. So passed. And we'll close the work session then on Senate Bill 510A.
Consent calendar?
Let's carry it.
Okay, we can consent calendar it?
No.
Start out that is. Work your way around.
Yeah.
I'll carry it.
Andy also will carry it.
Okay. So let's open up public hearing on Senate Bill 511A.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 511A creates an account receivable designation for any person or entity overpaid for support by the Department of Justice. It also allows a person 90 days to pay a debt before defining it as delinquent. There are no amendments, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay. Thank you. Kate, Mike, you want to come back up again?
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Olson and Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Kate Cooper Richardson, Director of the Oregon Child Support Program at the Department of Justice. Senate Bill 511A is even more arcane than maybe one of the prior bills. And it's actually very simple. It allows the department to create a receivable or essentially provide for a state debt based on an erroneous payment to someone other than the already existing folks. Right now it's parent receiving support or to another agency. This just expands it to if we're paying a caretaker and there's been an overpayment or a child attending school, even the parent who's paying support, sometimes there's an overpayment situation. This just expands that, allows us to collect it, and then also just expands the time period there so we don't have to report it as delinquent if they're already in a payment plan repaying it. Any questions?
Mike, do you have anything? No?
No, I think Kate did a nice job. I can answer questions if you have any.
Okay, any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, seeing none. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 511A and open a work session on Senate Bill 511A.
Mr. Chair, I'm getting a new script for consent calendar.
Negative on that.
I'm going to change up my motions. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 511A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Oh, man.
You want to debate this?
Okay. Well, I mean, personally, I mean, I'll carry it. I'm not a real consent calendar type person.
I've just made a motion. Do with it what you will.
Okay. Well,
I'll speak in opposition to Representative Williamson's motion to place it on the consent calendar and ask that we consider another motion.
I'll withdraw my motion. Fine.
Okay, thanks. We're going to move on.
Vice Chair Olson, I move Senate Bill 511A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 511A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Yes, Representative Post.
I noticed that during the hearing of this particular bill, the committee members from that side of the room are fanning themselves while Representative Gorsuch and I are freezing to death. And so I am now thinking of being a no on all these budgets just to get us out of here the quicker that I possibly got all these bills, because I'm grumpy now because I'm freezing cold over here.
You can stand
come and stand over here.
Yeah, that we could trade.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I just thank you. I just wanted to get that on the record that this building is freezing.
Yeah, okay, I get that. All right. So maybe you can confer with Representative Sanchez afterwards.
Thank you. I will not need a roll call, though. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Senate Bill 511A moves to the House floor.
I think Representative Biles should carry it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The rest of them, too.
And Senate Bill 511A is passed. Representative Vile.
Choice? Apparently not.
I tried.
I was doing the vice chair a favor, and now I regret.
That's why you don't do it. No.
Okay. Can I open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 513A?
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 513A removes the requirement that the Department of Justice notify the subject of a consumer report 10 days prior to making the request. It also allows for use of a consumer report in enforcement of a support order. There are no amendments, and there is a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Okay, Kate and Mike, you want to just stay up here?
Yeah, it's okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Olson and Williamson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Cooper Richardson, Director of the Oregon Child Support Program for the Department of Justice. Small bill, Senate Bill 513A does exactly what the council just described, and federal law used to have a requirement for us to send a 10 days notice. That's been cleared up. Actually, it was kind of based on a misunderstanding in the first place, but that requirement's been removed. It does delay some of our the 10-day notice actually did delay our some of the work that we were doing, and so I would just ask for your support for this bill. And if it would help, I will bring fans and blankets for the members of the committee in the future.
I'm warming up to this idea.
Is there any other questions? Mike, just checking. You don't have anything. Okay, you're just.
He's really my moral support.
No, Vice Chair.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 513A. And open a work session on Senate Bill 513A.
Mr. Vice Chair, I move Senate Bill 513A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
You can stay.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 513A to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved. And Representative Post.
I use the blanket analogy.
Good idea. Okay, so we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bills 514A, 516A, and 517A. Oh, and include 765A.
Okay.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Since we've opened through all of them, I won't go through all of them, but they all deal with the Department of Justice and the Division of Child Support therein. And so we can go ahead.
Oh, you're handing it off, huh? So, Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Olson and Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Cooper Richardson, Director of the Oregon Child Support Program of the Department of Justice. 514A is another exciting bill that just removes statutory mandates in ORS Chapter 25 to send the parents receiving support courtesy copies of four different types of enforcement notices. There was a time in our history in the child support program that we were so courteous we created a lot of confusion. We have decided not to be so nice, and actually we will be nicer by not creating confusion by sending these courtesy copies. The four areas or the four types of enforcement notices is a notice of income withholding orders, notice of intent to refer arrears for a state tax refund offset, notice of intent to report a child support account to consumer reporting agencies, and a notice of claim of lien. We have evaluated all of our different notices, which ones are mandatory, which ones are not, and then the value of those notices and the outcomes that we've had over time with these four notices have created a lot of confusion. They all sometimes create an unrealistic expectation of payment, and it requires a lot of work time in redacting the party's personal information. So we no longer see these as a benefit to our customers. And so we would ask the committee's indulgence to please pass this bill forward, and it'll save us a little bit of postage as well.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and continue on then with the next one?
Oh, just go on? Okay. Do you have to say my name again then?
So,
no, you're
516A, yeah, you're covered.
Okay, good, because it's getting to the point where I'm starting to forget it. Okay. So 516A is the next bill here before you, and it adds provisions to require that all orders for payment of child support and spousal support have a monthly due date on the first day of the month. This applies to all orders that are issued or modified After January 1st, the effective date of this act, so it won't be going backwards. But this bill will also help us in our new child support system. It's a which we already have an automated system, but this we will have a much more robust automated system when our system project is complete. And this helps create or avoid any confusion as well about when things are due, when they're delinquent. It will help with payments from employers to apply the current support, whether or not that due date is reached. Sometimes you have payments, employers are paying more than once a month, and so it can get pretty confusing. It also, I will say, this bill, we had a lot of anecdotal support from the private bar and actually the bench on this bill as well. Any questions? Okay. Am I permitted to move
forward? You're
doing
well. Keep going. All right. You're on Senate Bill 517.
On a roll. Okay, 517A. I don't even like explaining this one. It allows us to have rulemaking authority to limit the amount of any credit provided for a direct payment by the parent paying support to the parent receiving support. And it clarifies the amendments here and to this current statute to clarify that direct payments will no longer be credited against arrears owed to the state, which is another accounting problem as well. We right now have to handle a lot of our cases on a manual basis, and sometimes that creates credit balances, which also then avoiding those credit balances then will protect us from losing the assignment for that the state has, and also so that therefore reduces reliance on the general fund. We don't anticipate, well, we haven't had any opposition to this bill, and it will also support the automated functionality in our new child support system.
Any questions? And then the last one for the 765.
765. All right. 765 will another bill that helps us comply with federal regulations. In my previous testimony on 682, I talked about a new federal rule that was put into place in January. It was published in December and then put into place or effective in January. And that bill is pretty broad reaching as it relates to child support programs. And so this one removes the distinction between private and public health care coverage for determining appropriate health care coverage for a child, which is mandated by this rule. Just a reminder that we also do medical support, not just child support. It also eliminates the term private health care coverage from the definitions, and it also one other non-healthcare related provision that we are prohibited from disbursing child support payments to private collection agencies. It's not something we do, but now we are prohibited by federal regulation not to do that. So we wanted to make that clear in statute. Any questions?
Any questions? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will close a public hearing on Senate Bill 514A, 516A, 517A, and Senate Bill 765A. And open a work session on Senate Bill 514A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 514A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
So Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 514A to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, supported, and who would like to carry it? Okay, thank you, Representative Gorsuch.
Will do.
Okay, we'll close public work session on Senate Bill 514A and open a work session on Senate Bill 516A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 516A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 516A to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And who would like to carry it?
Representative Springer.
Absolutely. I like it. Nice ventriloquist act.
Okay, Representative Springer. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 516A, and we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 517A.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 517A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 517A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none. So ordered. And who would like to carry it? Representative Lining, would you like to?
Yes, I would.
I figure it's payment with the marijuana bill. Okay, so we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 517A and open a work session on Senate Bill 765A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 765A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Williamson moves Senate Bill 765A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
It's terrible.
Any objections?
Representative Olson should probably have to carry that bill.
Oh, good idea.
Representative Stark, would you carry that one for us?
The next one?
We're done.
There's no more.
That's it.
Okay, Representative Greenlick will carry
765.
Thank you. The business come before the committee. Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, for your work today. We're adjourned. We're adjourned.